seventh kingdom of life.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The human side of technology.
Welcome back to another episode of The Seventh Kingdom, a podcast where we explore the human side of technology. I'm Jason Lang, and I'm joined today with my co-host, Stan James, who I will be interviewing for a forthcoming short film I have in process called Share. So, Stan, I wanted to take this episode of our podcast today to talk to you about something I'm working on. I have a little short film I wrote about and told you about, I don't know, a little ways ago now.
Yeah, like last summer, I think.
Yeah, and I'm finally getting ready to crowdfund it. And as part of that, I've started this cool campaign called Would You Share at wouldyoushare.com. And so just quick recap, the short I've written and will be directing is about kind of a near science fiction future where there's the ability to record our complete experience. So kind of like all the way down the rabbit hole of something like Google Glass. So it's it can record our memories, our thoughts, our emotions, fantasies. Our whole subjective experience is suddenly captured, which is amazing for us, right? Because we can play it back. But what really fascinates me is, you know, what's the first thing you do when you want to, when you take a picture? You want to share it. So I've written a short that explores that what would happen if this technology was around and how it would specifically impact intimate couples. So the idea of, you know, one-on-one romantic partnerships that we already have in our culture that kind of come to a pinnacle around marriage. In this story I've written, it's not marriage isn't so important anymore. It's more about this act of sharing. So the question I want to pitch you today is, Stan, if this technology was real and you found yourself, you know, you were in a relationship and it was going well, do you think you would do it? Do you think you would share?
So, wow, that's, yeah. Okay, so let's, so what am I sharing here? So it's like all my memories, sort of experiences, you know, she could sort of tune in to my experience on the schoolyard in second grade, like this type of thing, like.
Yeah, so I've kind of written it as some, I guess, science magic in that it's kind of like a almost near instantaneous download of a person's life. So the way the way you have a memory of your life, they now have access to that. And
so it's like I know Kung Fu, but now she's like, I know Stan's life.
Yeah. So yeah, kind of like that. So, you know, technically who knows if anything will be possible, but what really interests me is what that would mean. Like somebody would just completely see you. You know, they would know everything.
Gosh, that's so.
And you would know everything about them.
Okay, so it's mutual. That's, I mean, that was my number one question, is that I feel it would be so lopsided in a relationship if someone knew everything about the other one, that it's like, wow, I want to say power imbalance, but I'm not, it's not just power. It's just a knowledge imbalance of, yeah, and it's like, like when one person has a webcam, the other one doesn't, and it's like really funny to do a Skype call when one person can see, the other one can't. So we'd be sharing everything. My gut is that I say I want to do it. You know, that I'm, in general, I'm a pretty transparent guy. I tag most of my Facebook photos to be viewable by everyone, right? So that means I'm an open, transparent person. Nothing to hide.
Yeah.
I put my phone number on my webpage. But yeah, you're right. But that's a very, you know, curated version of my life that I put out on the social networks and things. But so what you're talking about is this raw, uncurated, you know, all the icky parts too.
What we sometimes think are the icky parts, but sometimes they're, I don't know, what intrigues me is sometimes sharing that stuff is the stuff that really connects us the most, at least in my experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like it could be like a whiplash of going so deep so fast. I feel so much of building a relationship is the slow revealing of oneself to the other, you know. This is kind of like, you know, the opposite of the striptease. It's just the like, yeah, here I am.
That's very true.
I wonder how it would affect the relationship going forward, you know, because like you couldn't really reveal anything new, you know, like a few years later, or maybe something happens which like deeply reminds you of some traumatic event of your past or of my past. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, oh, you know this really? And she'd be like, oh yeah, I know. This is totally like that one time.
Yeah. Which I don't know, to me, that might actually be a great relief. Just the amount they understand. Of like, I, you know, if I leave the toothpaste cap off in the bathroom another night and you freak out and, you know, it's tied to some shame or some feedback you got in the kid, like I would understand that now. And it might actually make me more, I like to think it'd make me more empathetic towards my partner or who I shared with. Like,
yeah, that's an excellent point. I think, well, as long as you chose your partner carefully, they could deeply understand all your neuroses and things, or at least sort of understand where it comes from. Like, you know, oh, you were forced to do this as a kid, or you were made fun of about this, so that's why you're so sensitive about that.
Yep.
But you know, Jason, the thing that the biggest thing which looms in my mind now that you say it, a good friend of mine just stayed with me in my apartment for a few nights, and his dad just died in January, and he was still pretty raw from this emotion, and he was it came pretty quick. They had a month or so warning that his time was up, and so you know it was like a big deal of, you know, I helped them track my friend down in California so that he could fly home to be with the family. And were kind of tracking everyone down to get to his bedside so he could see everyone before he went. And, my friend told me that his mom basically said that she had learned things about his dad she learned more things in those final 2 weeks than she did in the whatever 30 years of marriage. That something about being that close to death or whatever that, you know, had opened him up in this way. Which I've never been married for 30 years, so I don't know what kind of secrets you would keep or what you wouldn't tell your partner after that long, but I can imagine there would still be pockets that you're holding out and that maybe you only really let out when you know you're at the end.
So, yeah. Man, that's just a really powerful story hearing that. Like to connect that deeply, right, as you're losing someone.
Right. But it also makes me feel about, you know, most people don't have that much warning when their loved one is going to be taken away, and they take those secrets or that side of themselves never share. It's just gone. Yeah. So in that sense, they were really lucky that, you know, he had this advance warning and had the opportunity to finally share everything. And it seemed from my friend's telling that it was a very cathartic and good experience for him to reveal everything.
Yeah. It really just strikes me hearing that story. Even, you know, I've specifically written this piece of drama around an intimate couple in terms of like, you know, romantically involved. But hearing that, I mean, it just really flashed across my mind, like to get that download from your parents, you know, the last month of their life, or at some point, like just to have that between generations, even like, because that is, I think that's, you know, often the case. You know, sometimes we lose people before we get these stories out of them or before we fully understand them. And it, you know, it makes me think of your, I don't know what the exact word is, but your archive project.
Which
if you want to tell people about a little bit.
Well, just the last, I guess, 6 or 7 years now, my dad has been scanning all of our old photos and has just really gone to town with it. And now he's scanned nearly 30,000 photos. And I've been kind of the tech support guy with, you know, making a website and helping him organize it. And we've also done audio tapes and video and trying to make some cool things where you can, like, you know, every day it emails us what happened on that day in family history, you know, photos from that day.
Wow.
And, you know, some days it's the 1920s and then it's the 70s and then it's the 90s. But it's part of that project for me was, you know, getting to know my dad and my parents. And it's like a small sliver of what you're talking about in your film. But
it's on that spectrum, though, I think, is what I'm realizing now, though. It's just like, you know, I'm kind of writing the most magical, pure form of it. But what you're doing is extending kind of the echoes of these memories and people. Like, I'm curious, are you literally just scanning them, or is there any context given to them? Like, does your dad sometimes write something and it gets tagged with the photo, or like, this was your grandmother, or this is your great grandmother?
Oh, man, he's done the full meal deal. He went through all of them have captions at this point, like 95%.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you are like kind of getting this experience to some extent with your father right now. It really strikes me. And that's kind of amazing.
Yeah. Which also reveals the other side of it, that it's a whole life. And I feel like I've only absorbed this teensy bit of it. Mm. Even all those photos, I can't claim to have looked at all 30,000 photos. I browse through once in a while and get the highlights. And every once in a while I get some little like, that was his girlfriend in whatever in high school. Oh, that's interesting. Or some like a letter maybe that his mom wrote to him when he was in Europe in the 60s or something. And that's pretty cool. But you just get these little slivers.
Yeah. And now that makes me wonder, like, so there's actually looking at the photos, you know, in reading the captions, which I guess to one extent has probably brought you closer to your father. You know, you've learned about him. But like, I imagine there's this other part too, that in even doing the project together,
yes,
it forces you to like spend time together and talk about things, which builds a whole different level of intimacy.
Totally. It was great to do a project together. It reminds me of like Boy Scouts, right? When you do a project with your dad building a teepee or something, and it's, you know, great to do that again as grown men. And and it's become this like ongoing thing of, you know, every once in a while he'll need tech support or help him pick out a new scanner, or, you know, Picasa came out with face tagging, so I showed him how he could face tag, and now almost all the pictures are, you know, face tagged. And and now he's really into geotagging. So a lot of the photos are, you know, mapped of where that photo was taken. And my dream is to kind of, you know, put it all together, that you can have a like a replay of the life to some degree, you know, so I could see my dad and like on a map where he was living, and these are the pictures and these are the people he was being tagged with in photos, and these are the letters that he was, you know, sending and receiving at that time. That's the master plan, but I think that would be really cool.
That sounds amazing. And so I guess I have another curious part of what I wanted to explore in the film is, you know, does data sharing necessarily lead to intimacy itself? Like,
yeah,
just knowing, you know, if you just got my memory, does that necessarily make us closer? I wonder, or is there something beyond that?
Yeah, well, this reminds me of sort of the difference between just data and storytelling, that, you know, there is a difference, I think, between just seeing the pictures of my dad's trip through Russia and hearing him tell the story, right? Somehow there's so much more of him with his biases and filtering of, you know, like, because there's something deeply him in the things which get skipped and the things that he highlights and the what sticks out to him from the trip. Yeah, I don't know, but then on the other side, just the data itself is interesting, just to get the broad swaths of he was living here and then he was here, and oh, look at his hairstyle changing ever so slowly, and oh yep, it's the 70s now, check out that tie.
Oh yeah, so I guess imagine experiencing that firsthand, you know, what would that it still blows my mind to even contemplate doing that with another person.
Yeah, and I don't know how deep it would go. Like, would I don't know. Like, would you feel the same, like, sense of fashion that that person had at that time in their life? I don't know. if my, like, you know, girlfriend was to experience me in high school, like, talk about shame, you know, the clothes I was wearing. I was painting my jeans, for goodness sake.
That's... another thing I wanted to talk to you about in terms of segueing it back into our podcast is,
yeah,
you know, I've written the short, as I've been saying, as science fiction, but part of the reason I wrote it is because I think some of this is already becoming science fact and it's happening. So, you know, one of the things I want people to get out of my short, in addition to just enjoying the drama of the piece, is to, you know, spark this question of asking each other, like, would you share? Would we share? You know, when a couple goes out and sees it. And I just wanted to get some of your thoughts, if you have any, on, you know, ways you think maybe technology is already impacting the way we relate or connect or be intimate even.
Yeah. I mean, there's obvious stuff, like you know, you Google your date, right? So that you meet someone, and well, even before they're your date, right? I go to a party, I meet a cute girl, I'm thinking I'm gonna contact her. The first thing you do is friend her on Facebook, and you dive through all her pictures, right? And see, you kind of get this sense, right, of you know a little bit about their life. At least you can see, like, okay, they went to this college, and it looks like sometime around 2008 she had a steady boyfriend, if, you know, judging by the photos. And it's like, it's kind of crazy
that
all of these things, which normally you would sort of, you know, would come out over a series of dates or a long time, you know, you got it in the first hour after you get home from first meeting the person.
Yeah, it strikes me hearing that, you know, it's entered our culture, you know, the big behemoth in the room being Facebook as a social network, but really its lasting impact and legacy may actually be a type of memory device, you know, an external archive of our lives.
Of our lives, yeah.
The shift to timeline clearly, you know, indicates that to an extent. And right now we just kind of put stuff in there without, you know, I'm even realizing it, without thinking about the fact that, you know, the internet doesn't forget.
Yeah. So, I mean, but then in the same way, like with my dad's archive, he's got postcards and letters in there that I'm sure the people weren't thinking, you know, this is for posterity in the future. They were just, you know, writing a little letter, you know, dear mom, having a great time, wish you were here type of stuff. And possibly even more so than digital stuff. You know, this paper sticks around, and
it's true.
I don't know. A friend of mine has this theory that we could actually be the lost generation, that the world of paper and documents, it will sort of survive forever because, you know, paper lasts a long time. And we are in this sort of awkward transition phase where everything's digital, but nothing's really standardized and no one really thinks about longevity. And, you know, it's like maybe Facebook goes under or some weird format, you know, that, you know, in like 500 years, I'll have it totally figured out how to store stuff. But we are in this like weird, awkward stage between the physical and the digital where our stuff is probably all going to get lost.
Yeah, that's quite possible.
But I don't. Sorry, I'm diverging from your question.
That's all right.
But yeah, it's already crazy how, especially when it comes to just raw data, you can already communicate so much to someone so fast. You know, you can't really do it in a brain implant dump, but you can read all their posts, you see all their pictures, you can read essays, you can get police reports on them if they've been in trouble.
Yeah. You
get all newspaper mentions. It's yeah, I mean, I don't know if that really counts as intimacy, but it's a kind of intimacy, right? That
I think it's getting to know the person. Some, you know, based more on external things, but yeah, that can lead to, but even in a sense, then, you know, like using this example of online dating, if you do that, you already have a form, you're already intimate with that person to a degree the first time you meet them that you wouldn't be otherwise, where you might have some context around, oh, you know, I saw you went to Australia last year, or you're a huge, you know, Chicago Cubs fan. It seems like it's already pushing in that direction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there's other types of sharing too, right? That so like on my little iPhone here, I now have the Find My Friends app.
Yeah.
Where I think we're friends on that, Jason, actually.
I think we are.
Like right now, I can bring up and see where you are.
Yep.
And like, I mean, so now like my mom's on that and a few other people. And I was just thinking, you know, if I had a girlfriend, like, would I share my location? That it's not that I don't want her to know, but it is kind of weird, right? That, you know, like if I go somewhere that's kind of off of my normal routine, would she be like, so Stan, I saw this afternoon, you were like, what's going on there? You know?
Yeah. I think that's one I hadn't thought about. I do in fact, have location sharing with my partner right now. And that, you know, I didn't really think twice about it, but it was a decision, and it in fact helped us save her phone, which is a story into itself, about a year ago when her purse got stolen.
Oh, right. Yeah.
She hadn't set up Find My iPhone yet, but we were fine. We had friended each other, so I could see where her phone was on my thing, and we chased it through LA and eventually found it in a ditch and got all of her stuff back, which was
that's awesome. What a great story.
Kind of amazing. Yeah, you know, this always
and,
online
by the
technology.
Way, I just checked, and yeah, you are at home. Very good.
That's right. but it does strike me that, you know, we're already seeing so much of this coming at us, and it is changing even what it means to be intimate. I mean, just doing these interviews with people has struck me. I haven't really been on the video chat bandwagon.
Yeah.
Despite my like super tech self, because, you know, the phone never made a huge impact on me. I do not like talking on the phone. It's like hard for me to stay present and embodied with the conversation, but it's been a viscerally different experience getting to know video chatting people. And it's like, I feel much closer to people at the end of a, you know, 20-minute chat than I do at the end of a phone call.
Yeah. And I wonder if other technologies will just bring that further. Well, in one of our episodes, we talked about this, it was like basically a mini EEG that you put on your head that would like record your arousal state and your like calmness state. And I was just thinking, you imagine sharing that with a partner, of just knowing, you know, like, oh,
wow.
Like right now, my girlfriend is really excited about something. I wonder what that is. Or her heart rate's really racing.
Talk about spider sense tingling.
Yeah.
Like, wow, you're really, you know, my partner's really stressed out right now. Like, call her, you know?
Oh, yeah, I should give her a call. Like, she's really afraid, you know? Like, okay, I need to get in there.
That does seem like one of the big things that technology so far is good at. You know, there's definitely some things it's not good at, but it's very its killer app right now is connecting people in different geographical spaces. I would say that's almost inarguable at this point, that, you know, we can have this chat and you can be halfway across the country, I can be here, and that's never been possible before to this extent and to at this level of ease.
Right. Now, but to play the curmudgeon here, though, I mean, this goes back to a theme often in our podcast, but I do think to some degree it gives the illusion that there is more intimacy happening than there actually is. That, you know, just because I can see the other person, I feel closer and more connected. And you are certainly more so than a normal telephone call, but to think that it's the same as being physically with the other person, it's like, no, there's so much missing.
That I would agree with. I think it's a it's a spectrum, and what's emerging is this whole like middle ground that simply didn't exist before. If you're either in the same space or you're not, now there's like the, well, we're not in the same place, but we're sharing the same space.
I see her tweets and I've got her photo stream coming out and I know her lat long and I know what she's working on and I know what website she's looked at, but she's in another continent. It's a strange world we're in.
And that brings up for me, I think you were the one that actually first introduced me to the term, because you saw, I don't remember which of the Twitter co-founders maybe speak back in the Colorado days.
Oh, ambient intimacy.
Yes, a term that has just stuck with me over these years. The idea being, you know, it's not an active form of intimacy, which is what we're most used to, is calling you up, interrupting your day. Hey, Stan, what's going on? What are you doing today? Where are you?
Yeah.
Versus,
but it's more like, well, it reminds me of like in college or something when I would be like working away in my room, and I knew my buddies were like in their bedrooms, and you would like hear them kind of shuffle or go to the kitchen once in a while. And it was kind of comforting, right? It was like, I didn't have to be actively talking with them and, you know, hey, we're bonding, but it was this kind of nice feeling that we're all here and we're doing our thing, but I know they're over there and I have a vague sense of what they're up to. And I think the point of this person talking about Twitter was that it kind of gives you this sort of a similar sense of, I'm connected with this person and I generally know little bits about their life, that they are, you know, like, oh, they're going to the airport on a trip, or, oh, they've got a case of the Mondays at work, you know? And it's not like we're sharing deep, intimate secrets, but I feel the pulse of their life and I'm ambiently intimate with them.
Totally. It makes me think of, I'm just realizing one of the first ways I experienced that was when I first went to college, moved away from Illinois to California. It was maybe 4 to 5 years into the AOL Instant Messenger craze and the explosion of online chat, and just the simple act of logging in and seeing people online was actually very soothing. Like oftentimes I wouldn't talk to people, but there they were. Like if I need to reach out, they're there. Just like, oh, they're still present in my world. Even if it's like down to this just little like microscopic amount, there they are. And that's just a pleasing form of connection that takes no work, no effort whatsoever.
Yeah. Maybe this is a totally topic for another episode, but I'm hearing you say that, I realize that I sometimes feel this way about, you know, seeing who's logged in. But other days I feel more like guilt, like, oh, I haven't talked to that person in so long and they can see that I'm online and I see that they're online. And it gives me this like sense of guilt that, you know, with two clicks, I could be typing with them and getting a catch up on their life. I really don't have the time or the emotional energy right now to do it.
But you're still friends. And this is what really, I think, just points out, if there's anything I'm realizing about, you know, this relationship of technology and intimacy, and even this fictional like fantasy technology I have of like complete transparent sharing, is, you know, the technology itself, I think I could argue, doesn't lead to intimacy, but it just creates an abundance of opportunities for intimacy. It allows us. So next time I see that friend who I haven't actually talked to in months, but they live in Berlin, and I go there and I do check their Facebook feed now and then, I still, you know, there's some stuff I'm going to want to talk to them about because I saw they did this show or they went to this place, or, and I feel like that's creating more opportunities for, you know, connection.
Cool. Well, I hope your film comes out soon. I want to see the finished product. I've heard you talking about it so long and the ideas are so rich.
Yes. I'm very excited to, get it into production here shortly, and we'll definitely be sharing it online once it's played the festival circuit a little bit. And I think I'll have many more films in this vein coming through, oftentimes based on stuff we're talking about right here on the Seventh Kingdom.
Cool. As long as you just don't do one sequel after another, because that's boring.
Yeah. All right, Stan James.
Cool, Jason. Thanks for the update on your film. And yeah, I look forward to the Kickstarter campaign and watching it myself as soon as possible.
Thank you, my friend.
Get more information about this episode and listen to previous episodes at www.seventhkingdom.org. The Seventh Kingdom podcast is produced by Jason Lang and Stan James, with audio production by Charles Gamill, and this recording created by me, an unpaid computer program. Thank you for listening.